Canucks Central Wednesday. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Kintech studio. Canucks Central is for Ensign Pacific, Vancouver's premier Chrysler, Dodge, Ram, and Jeep superstore on 2nd Avenue between Cambie and Main, or at ensignpacificchrysler.ca. A lot to get into as the Canucks seal up the Pacific Division and are now looking ahead to round one of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Still a lot that needs to develop, Sat. We can't officially start breaking down the first round opponent because although it is most likely going to be the Nashville Predators, it's not guaranteed to be the Nashville Predators.
No, we could find out as early as tonight.
Yes.
Whether the
Dallas
Canucks
gets a point.
Yeah. The issue is, and we'll get to it, when do we find out when game one is?
That's an interesting question. And we got a little hint at how Rick Tocchet and the Canucks are maybe feeling about which way the schedule is headed. So let's get into it. It's Canuck Central. It is The Open here on Sportsnet 650. The Open.
Welcome to The Open.
Bon! That's your home. Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
Yes, it's The Open, where we bring you the latest on the Vancouver Canucks. And what did we hear today from Rick Tocchet after a morning skate before they flew out to Winnipeg for the season finale tomorrow against the Winnipeg Jets? It sounded like he's not thrilled about the idea of having to play on Sunday. At least if I'm reading the tea leaves and reading body language. I know, I'm just a radio host, but sometimes I'm a body language expert.
amongst an expert at many other subjects and topics.
Yeah, sometimes part-time doctor when I want to be, trying to evaluate injuries.
But a lot of people nowadays with
the
way.
It's kind of the way it goes in today's day and age. But the thing about this is Sunday feels like where it's headed, as we talked about yesterday, even on the post-game show, and as Irf mentioned to us on Canuck Central yesterday. But is that necessarily what the Canucks are pushing for as a team? And it doesn't feel like that.
Well, at least not the head coach.
Yeah.
You know, PJ, I think, mentioned how even the Canucks didn't love Tuesday, maybe organizationally. I think Tocchet himself said he preferred Monday or Tuesday. I don't think he loves the notion of playing on Sunday.
Yeah.
And he pretty much laid it out. It's up to TV, not us.
Yeah.
So which TV networks do we blame?
Is it the American TV networks?
Let's just blame the Americans and not ours, because I don't think it's ours.
Is it our bosses in Toronto? We might have to be yelling at some people in Toronto about this.
There maybe some evil telecom, perhaps.
What I do know is, like, the way Rick Tocchet laid it out, and he said, well, you know, I'd prefer to have 2 days of meetings, getting the guys intel on their upcoming opponent, but we may only have to do 1 day, and then how much do you want to give them in 1 day, and plus practice time, and all these different types of things. And as we sit and look at Nashville as the most likely opponent, I've heard the talk that, you know, Nashville didn't love playing on Tuesday either because they would have more than a week off from their last game, and then it becomes, okay, this is now too much rest for our guys and puts us at a disadvantage, which may be a little bit overblown. But it's clear that Tuesday is not something either group is in love with. It would force them into potential of a back-to-back at some point in Nashville to make sure they got the series on schedule at some point, because they would be starting later than most other series. And then I start looking at it and I'm wondering, well, doesn't Monday just make the most sense then for this series to start? Logically, Monday, and you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure this out and do a quick search of building availability and those types of things to figure out that Monday the 22nd would be sort of the ideal start for this series.
It would be the ideal because they can make it work. I mean, up until game seven, it works out perfectly. So based on building availability, you could have Monday, Wednesday at Rogers Arena.
Yeah.
Then you could have Friday, Sunday at Bridgestone.
And you can't do the 24th or the 25th. So if they were to start on Sunday, they would play game one Sunday the 21st, game two Sunday Tuesday the 23rd. Then they'd have to take 2 days off. There was a concert on the 24th and 25th at Bridgestone Arena. So, as you were just mentioning, this way, if you start on Monday, then you can just, at least for the first four games of the series, it can be easily laid out in a game every other day. Yeah. Proper routine, as it were. This is what makes the most sense. The only area you might end up into a little bit of an issue is where Game 7 might land.
Honestly, it's Game 7 that's the issue, because up until game, you can play every other day up until Game 6.
Yeah.
Now, if you play Game 7, however, Game 6 would be get played then, I guess it would be, what, the Friday or the Saturday?
It would, schedule-wise, you know, if you were to do it every other day, it would line up to be May the 4th, which is the Saturday, and Pearl Jam is in town on Saturday, May the 4th.
Now, what complicates it even further is on the 5th, it's a day off.
Yeah.
So it's available technically on May 5th, but Pearl Jam has another show on May 6th.
Yes. So they would have to tear down and then put it back up.
But you could, conceivably, you could be done by the 5th. So you could do it. Now, the issue is we can see the path to it, so it's doable.
Yes.
But if they're not doing it, then there are other matters. There are other things that dictate why this is happening the way it's happening.
Yeah. And that is television networks trying to make sure that they get their schedule lined up and probably wanting to have a full loaded schedule of playoff hockey this coming Sunday, April the 21st. There's only so many series that could be started on the 20th, I would imagine, given that so many teams are finishing here on the Thursday of this week, especially in the Western Conference. So you're forced into probably trying to jam a couple of extras onto the 21st. And let's remember, a couple of weeks ago when it was announced that the playoffs were going to be moved up, it was, again, because of the television networks. Initially, the schedule had the playoffs not beginning until the 22nd of April, but they moved it up to start on the 20th because the television networks wanted it to start on the weekend.
Yes.
So here we are.
And that's the reality of what's going to happen. It's clear, though, the team, like, as you mentioned, like the coach isn't overly enthused about it, right? And, you know, he was kind of bemoaning the fact that, okay, we have to, you know, get a rest day in. You know, he got the guys to skate today a little bit before they flew out. And he's like, based on the fact we're playing on Sunday, I felt like, you know, they needed to do a little something, get a little bit of a sweat going. And then you have to consider things for Friday, because now it means Friday you have to have a meeting day. You can't skate. You have to, but you can't let the guys have a full day off because you have to prepare for the game on Sunday. And that means you have one practice ahead of the playoffs, which would be the Saturday.
Yeah. So it puts the Canucks at a little bit of a disadvantage going into the series, assuming it's Nashville. Like, Nashville's home and cooled out. They could be scouting every possible opponent that they currently have for days on end before the Canucks are even finished their season.
Yeah, and I think, you know, from the talk has kind of been that both organizations are assuming they're going to face one another. And I think the Predators have been assuming that for a couple of days now. They're, at the moment, preparing for Vancouver.
Yeah. And why wouldn't they?
Yeah, you know, and the only way that changes is if, you know, if Dallas loses and all of a sudden the game on Thursday means something, where the Canucks, if they win it, they finish first. Like, that's the only time that they would maybe flip and start really focusing on somebody else. But right now, that opponent is getting ready to play Vancouver. Whereas Vancouver, yeah, they're probably thinking about Nashville, but they have a game still to play tomorrow.
Yeah. And it's an interesting spot that they put themselves in. Raymond, Dan, NHL and Make Sense do not go together.
No, that's true. I mean, and it's one of those things, like, you know, it's not even just the NHL. You have other, like, and even the telecom stuff, they have other properties too, especially American telecoms. It's not as simple as...
Well, TNT's got NBA playoffs.
Exactly. There's a lot going on, you know, so a lot of things to juggle. And unfortunately, sometimes somebody gets the short end of the stick. It just kind of, and honestly, like, is it going to cause the Canucks to not win the series? Probably not.
Yeah.
It's more about, it just puts so much more focus on game one all of a sudden. Like, doesn't game one matter so much more?
It puts a little bit more focus on game one. Like, you know, you're not losing the series in game one, but you like to get a head start, right? Yeah. You like to be, especially this team, they've preferred to be in the lead all season long. They've been good with leads, and you'd want to start on the right foot in that spot. but it's a little bit of a situation that they've got themselves in. Is it something they can't overcome? Absolutely not. You know, it shouldn't be used as that kind of an excuse, but it certainly, I think, in the interest of fairness, would make the most sense to start on Monday. At least give the Canucks one kind of rest day and then two prep days for the start of a series.
Yeah. But, you know, like we saw this text come in from Jamie in Richmond, Canucks just sent out an email for booking sports bar seats for game one and two. They list game one as Sunday, April 21st, and game two as the 23rd, is what Jamie in Richmond says. And it's all tentative, but I do know it's kind of, even like Talkett sounded resigned to the fact that it's going to be Sunday, didn't he?
Yes.
Didn't it sound like somebody that's like, well, we'll see what happens. He mentioned, yeah, we'll see, but he didn't seem like somebody who assumed that this could change from Sunday.
It's really pointing to Sunday being the day for this thing to start.
I like this text. I haven't even started the playoffs and the whining has begun.
Yes. Yes. That's the way that it goes. Tyler, can't wait for Pearl Jam on the 4th. I would imagine Pearl Jam puts on quite a show. May the 4th be with you, Tyler.
Oh, yes. By the way, May 4th. That's right. Forgot about that.
You think Eddie Vedder makes a May the 4th be with you joke?
Probably not.
He doesn't seem like a Star Wars guy.
I don't
to
know.
You.
I mean, I guess maybe he could surprise. Who knows? Yeah. I don't think so. No, mumble something. Well, yes, great. I like, by the way, I like Pearl Jam. Yes. So don't, you know, I like to just make fun of Eddie better. But
They had the SNL skit back in the day, so it's fair game for everybody to go down the same path. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. That's the latest on the Canucks and playoff scheduling. You know, there's a couple of things I did want to get to here, and one of them is JT Miller, because there was a lot of discussion about the team MVP award. We talked a little bit about it on the post-game show last night, Sat, and yeah, JT wins team MVP as voted by the fans. And I don't want to make this a debate about JT or Quinn Hughes. Like, both had incredible seasons. Right. There are clearly some that are going to say JT was the most valuable player and the engine of the team and all of those things. And you wouldn't be totally wrong in saying that.
So could you say that, and I'm totally mixing, you know, metaphors and everything here, but that Quinn is the engine of the team.
Yeah.
And JT is the heartbeat of the team.
I guess you could. Sure. I wouldn't dispute that too much with you. Quinn Hughes, the engine, and JT, the heartbeat.
Yes.
Who's the radiator?
Who is the radiator? It's a thankless job.
Who are the tires? What's
is Connor Garland the spark plug? Yes. Oh, hi, Sat.
He is. It's
Connor Garland is the spark plug. That's perfect.
Same
yes.
size, too, is perfect.
So, yes, Quinn Hughes, the engine. JT Miller, the heartbeat of the team. But, as I said, I don't want to make this a debate about JT or Quinn Hughes, but I think there's a story behind the fans voting for JT as MVP of this team. Considering JT, 15 months ago, was like, get the guy out of town. Pittsburgh offered anything for him? You make that trade. It's a seventh round pick. I don't care. Make the trade. Don't keep the contract. Get rid of the contract. Anything you can do, get rid of it. That's where a lot of people were. I know we weren't necessarily here on the show saying that. We always sort of, when we discussed it, it would take a pretty big offer and a well-sized offer for the Canucks to move off of JT Miller at last year's deadline. But there was a lot of discussion about it. There was a lot of discussion about how could they choose Miller over their captain, Bo Horvat, and on and on and on it went. That night in Calgary where there was a lazy back check. There was the night with Colin Delia slamming his stick on the net.
Colin Delia
like
night.
Anything that could happen with JT Miller to get the fans all up in a tizzy, it happened. And they were mad. And they threw their fury at JT Miller about where the team was headed. Some of it was fair. Some of it was hyperbole. But the idea that he's completely now won over the fan base to the point where he's won team MVP as voted by the fans over the captain of the team, Quinn Hughes, who might win the Norris this year, should win the Norris in my humble opinion. I think that says something about how much of a 180 this fan base has taken on with JT Miller.
It absolutely does. And you know, it kind of goes both ways, right? That frustration he showed, and he kind of became the target of people's frustration. And some of it was earned, as you mentioned. And yeah. And boy, were the takes amazing. Especially around the Delia.
The takes were fire.
Oh, they were fantastic. I mean, looking back at it now, even more so. But yes. It was a lot of really interesting takes around JT. Now, as you said, a lot of it was earned, too.
It's like
based on how he
Max
played.
Kellerman on Andre Iguodala. That's how hot the takes
yes,
were.
Yes, it was. And you know what? And some of it, as you mentioned, was fair and everything, right? But when the tables turn and the team all of a sudden is successful and he's playing his best hockey, that passion becomes more fuel for your passion as well, right? I mean, what does everybody want to see? They want to see a player that plays for the crest.
Yeah.
That goes out there and does things out of sheer will because he wants the team to. Like, fans want to see somebody care as much as they do. Mm-hmm. Sometimes some players do. A lot of players don't. They don't care the same way you do in terms of, winning for the organization. They view success a lot differently, but clearly he's a guy who wants to win, and also he's playing incredible hockey.
Yeah,
and it's hard. You don't find like, and we always talk about power players, and in hockey there's always a big soft spot for big power players that can produce and have a bit of snarl to their game. Like Todd Bertuzzi was a massive fan favorite here.
Yeah,
Ryan Kessler was a fan favorite. Now turned around, obviously, again it cuts both ways. When things get bad, he became a big target of frustration because that same type of attitude was detrimental to the team to some degree, right? And I think JT's of that. It's just, I don't think the team has been good enough for it to matter. And when it finally mattered, you truly appreciated what JT Miller could bring to the table.
He, as you mentioned earlier, can be the heartbeat of the team. How many nights did he start for Rick Tocchet, right? He was first guy over the boards. This is the guy we're going to set the tone of this game with. And so often, he answered the bell to that job, to that duty. The Canucks' top line this year was not led by Elias Pettersson. It was led by JT Miller. JT Miller and Brock Besser were the duo of the Canucks' best forward line from start to finish.
Yeah.
You know, Pettersson had his moments, had his time when he was the guy leading the way, but Miller has been, and the numbers bear this out, even just looking at the raw numbers and his 103 points compared to Pettersson's 88 or 89, whatever it's at right now, it shows this guy has been the more consistent player, and he did that while on most nights taking the toughest competition, taking the other team's top line, having to deal with that, winning faceoffs in bundles, and really being the player that they've needed him to be and answering to the bell of, we need you to be the heartbeat of this team. And when he did that, it's, you know, like with JT, we've always said, like, yeah, he's got a lot of energy and he can have his frustrations get the best of him. But so often this year, his energy fueled him into positive areas, into ways to help the team get back on track, get back into a game, set the tone of a game. And that's where I think the biggest difference is. You know, his turnovers, I think he still has a lot of turnovers, but it's more so like this guy has the puck a lot, so he's going to have a lot of turnovers. His giveaways happen in better spots on the ice. There's just so much about JT's game that was more sound, more well-rounded this year. And a lot of that, I think, goes to the improved structure of the roster as well.
Well, he epitomizes the buy-in that each person has had. And the fact that he's one of those players, too, that has produced at a high level. Like, he's been one of the most prolific Canucks scorers of all time.
Yeah.
Like, the only player who has a higher point per game, and I've mentioned this for a very long time, is Pavel Bure.
Yeah.
You know, and yes, like and when you add that with a player who's bought in, a player who's at least showing far better leadership, and it's not like he's a perfect player still. He still has moments when, you know, it's not perfect, but I mean, show me a perfect hockey player regardless, right?
Yeah.
And everybody in a Canadian market gets scrutinized a lot more than anywhere else. And, you know, you will still hear criticism from time to time. And sometimes it's fair. You talk about game to game and you have to tell the story. Sometimes players play well, sometimes they don't. But when you're scoring 103 points, and you're putting up all-time numbers for an organization, like, how can you not become a fan favorite? Like, we were asking the question, why isn't he a bigger fan favorite?
Yeah.
Maybe 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And then now it really turned.
Now he wins the team MVP. A couple of texts coming in. Do you guys actually get paid for this? Yes. Yes, we do. It's quite the living to have. We appreciate it. Amro, the actor. JT needed to be traded? Nah, you crazy. We're hearkening back to some of the takes that were going on last year ahead of the trade deadline when the rumors around JT potentially going to the Pittsburgh Penguins started to flare up and even, you know, go further back. Mm-hmm. And before he signed his contract, the draft that year, if he was being traded to the New York Islanders or not. There was a lot of trade discussions around JT Miller prior to him signing the long-term extension with the Vancouver Canucks. That's what we were reminiscing about to a certain extent, and how far his reputation has come with the fan base now, a day after winning the team MVP. The process of the team awards reflects one of two possibilities. One, the fans are not as smart as they think they are. Two, there is a major flaw in how fans' opinions and votes are collected. Not all fans are on Twitter, nor their email lists. That is another text coming in. And it's a good point. You know, we often say it here, like the fans on Twitter are actually the minority of the Canucks fan base. It is a small section of the people that actually go to fill out Rogers Arena on a regular basis. But they are often the loudest bunch of Canucks fans as far as their opinions on certain things. Bottom line is JT Miller, team MVP, and is won over the fan base tenfold from where it was 15 months ago. And even those that didn't love the contract when it was initially signed by JT in September of last year.
Yeah, absolutely. And hey, it's one of those things, right, where it's okay to be wrong on players.
Yes.
And it's okay to also get more information that informs a new opinion of a player. And I think JT's also given you plenty more new information for people to change their minds on him, too.
It's also part of, you know, something that the front office talked about quite a bit, and how their success this year is absolutely no fluke. And that's something I want to get into tomorrow ahead of the game against the Winnipeg Jets. Canuck Central Roundup, a couple of things you need to know. Tockett not sure who will sit and who will play tomorrow night in the season finale against the Winnipeg Jets. He said everyone except one player will travel. I'm not going to speculate as to who that one player is, but it sounds as though Tockett is still very much mulling over, you know, which players he might sit for the finale against the Winnipeg Jets and which will play. So that's what's going on. What we do know, Tockett mentioned this, Demko is the expected starter against the Winnipeg Jets. Felt great today. Clearly wants to play another game, get more reps in, so Demko is going to get a second start before the playoffs begin.
Yeah. And to me, it makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, like, is one game really enough for you?
Yeah. I mean, you got enough shots.
Yeah. Yeah.
And made 39 saves.
And he himself said, he's like, yeah, I felt pretty good, a couple of things or whatever. Like, honestly, I think two games.
I think it's more about rhythm.
Yeah.
Than anything else. You know, kind of getting back into the rhythm of game, off day, game, off day, game. Like, players are creatures of habits. Professional athletes are creatures of habit. And I think that's as much of it for Demko as anything else. But as Tockett said, you know, if we're giving up 40 shots at the end of two periods, I don't know if I'm going to play Demko for the third. So we'll see how tomorrow plays out with that in mind. All right. Speaking of the goalie, Kevin Woodley, our goalie guru, he's going to join us. His take on how Demko looked in his first game back was pretty good, making 39 stops against the Calgary Flames. We'll get to Woodley next on Canuck Central. We're back on Canuck Central. It's Dan Riccio, Sad T.R. Shaw. Canuck Central is for Ensign Pacific, Vancouver's premier Chrysler, Dodge, Ram, and Jeep superstore on 2nd Avenue between Cambie and Main, or at ensignpacificchrysler.ca. We're in the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for, and we welcome in our next guest. He is the goalie guru in Goal Magazine and NHL.com and weekly here on Canuck Central. It is Kevin Woodley, and he is a presentation of White Rock Hyundai. What's happening, Woodley?
Not much, boys. It's a beautiful day, and I am looking forward to, whether it's Sunday or Monday or whenever the hell this gets started, going to the rink in the sunshine. I remember we talked about it last year when I got to go to Seattle and sort of cover playoff hockey for the first time. And 8 years then, it'll be 9 years now here in Vancouver. There's just nothing that beats it, right? Like weather like this and popping to a rink for a few hours, the energy, like I'm an old man, so I don't get excited about much, boys, but I'm excited about this.
Well, they made the city wait long enough for playoff hockey in Vancouver, certainly, that the tension and the hope is built up for a while now. And of course, you know, they get the win last night over Calgary, and now we're still just waiting on the opponent. But you know, the biggest storyline last night, or one of the bigger storylines, was obviously Thatcher Demko, and he makes 39 saves. Looks incredible, as he normally does, his Vezina caliber self. What did you make of Demko's return?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much everything you said, right? Like, there was a number of sort of post-to-post backdoor opportunities, at least a couple real doozies, where you know, you saw that explosiveness that I talked with you guys about, like seeing him practice right from the get-go last week. Like, I wasn't worried about him physically, frankly. You know, because of watching him in practice, because of having conversation about where he was at physically and how he felt about his game and his movements and all the elements that we'd seen on the ice, you know, before they dropped the puck on an actual game, the only thing was the timing. And, you know, there were a few moments, and he talked about it afterwards, about a few things he still wants to work through. There were some times when he got caught moving back and forth behind screens and maybe arguably ended up on the wrong side of them. There was one play behind the net, you know, where he went into a reverse track double seal where he's got to skate on each post and, you know, picked a side, so to speak, a little early, and the puck went out to the other side. And if it connected, he was on the wrong side of the net. So those are things that are tough plays for sure. But they're details that when he's really, really, really dialed, he doesn't miss, right? Like, he doesn't get caught going to the wrong side on a play behind the net. So, you know, you want a few more reps, and I expected all along, frankly, I know there was conversations about it, but I expected all along for him to play both, and that would be his preference, to be ready for game one of the playoffs, and it sounds like that's what's going to happen in Winnipeg tomorrow night.
And in terms of, you know, where he feels he can kind of get better, you know, he didn't really get into any real details on it, but after your first game, that second game, not to say that you couldn't use any more, but going into that second game, like, what are some areas you think that he could maybe fine-tune a bit more?
I just think it's seeing, finding pucks through traffic, through the inevitable chaos that comes with a game and the pace of that chaos that you can't replicate, you know, in a practice, no matter how hard you try, because guys don't want to be in those lanes with a guy winding up from the point in a practice. Like, that's just the reality. You don't want them there. They're going to get hurt, right? Like you don't want to be blocking shots. You don't want to be in lanes. You don't want to be in the wrong spot. Even, you know, when it's your teammates as forwards, right? So it's just, there's a level of chaos. You know, I know Ian Clark has referred to it as the jungle. You know, you've just got to engage in it and get comfortable with your reads behind it. I've talked to you guys before about, you know, the pro reads that we do at Ingle, where we sit down and review videos with NHL goalies, including, you know, there's, I think we've got 9 or 10 up with Thatcher Demko at the website where, you know, from a 45-minute video session I did with him last year. And it really is mind-blowing the amount of detail that these guys are tracking and accounting for in real time in order to make those decisions on, you know, positioning, post-integration, save selection. It's staggering. And most of it, if not all of it, frankly, by the time you hit the ice, is innate, right? Because to go to the old Top Gun line, if you think out there, you're dead. It has to become natural. And I think most of it comes back really quick. But it's just the more reps you get, the more comfortable you are with not thinking, with just reacting in those moments and knowing, hey, like, yeah, as this guy pushes me on a flash screen to the short side, I'm good till here. Do I keep following him to the point of getting outside my lane, or when do I cross over to the middle? Like, you can't consciously go through that as it's happening, it all just kind of has to become instinct. But when they watch video after, like, again, like, the amount of information they're processing is incredible. And I just think the more you do that at game speed amid that chaos, the easier and more comfortable you become in that environment. You know, because let's be honest, in the playoffs, what are we going to hear? We're going to hear both sides, right? Traffic to the net, take away his eyes. That's what we heard out of the Flames last night. They generated a fair bit, almost 3.16 was the expected goal, 7 high danger chances. That's where their only goal came from. But even after the game there, they felt like, hey, against an elite goaltender, we need to get in his eyes a little bit more than we did last night. And that's what he's going to face in the playoffs, and that's the stuff he has to get comfortable with, you know, in this next start against Winnipeg.
Yeah, and, you know, he's going to get the start. He's expected to get the start against Winnipeg tomorrow. And I imagine, too, it just from a routine standpoint coming off, you know, he's out for over a month. He probably just wants to, you know, kind of get back into that routine of game, day off, game, or not day off, but, like, you know, get ready for the next game kind of thing and just get back into the routine of playing every other day.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, like, I know there's been a lot of people that, you know, there was consternation about there only being 2 games. And I know when the injury first came and we heard it was going to be towards the final week of the season, I said, look at the preseason, look at the fact he only plays 2, maybe 3 starts in the preseason, and he was the best goalie in the world for the first 6 weeks of the season. Like, literally lapped the field in goals saved above expected. The lion's share of his Vezina case was built in those first 6 weeks. So that's what you're hoping for. When I sort of pitched that to him after the first sort of media session that he did, we had a pretty lengthy back and forth afterwards, one-on-one. And I asked if I'd oversimplified that. And he said, well, why? Like, I said, cause there are people that are worried about, like, 2 games not being enough. And he's like, let's just put it this way. He is not worried about it at all. Right. So, like, I think you want that confidence, but it wasn't a false bravado. Like, he just feels like that's more than enough. It's not like he's been out for 3 or 4 months. He's only been out for 4, you know, I guess 5 weeks between games. And he just feels really confident through the work he does on video and where he's at with his game that all he needs is 2 games worth of reps and he'll be fine.
You know, Casey DeSmith was pretty great in his final showing before Demko's return in that game against Edmonton on Saturday. Overall, the team's record from Demko getting injured, 7-5-2. And I was thinking about the Boudreaux season where the Canucks finished hot that year. And Jim Rutherford comes to the podium for his end of season availability. And one of the first things he says was, we need to become a team that doesn't rely on our goaltending so much. And a 7-5-2 record without your Vezina caliber starter in the lineup isn't incredible, but I don't think the record was, like, the record was more about their inability to score goals than it was on their ability to defend and the type of goaltending they were getting. And they've done essentially what they set out to accomplish as a front office, Kevin, and that's build a team and build a structure of a team that's not as reliant on its Vezina caliber goaltender as it was in the past.
Yeah, no, and it wasn't just Boudreaux. It was Markstrom's final year here too, right? Like,
yeah.
Lean on the goalie really heavily. It's kind of what we'd seen here for a while, and you're absolutely right. They're not that team anymore. And so, you know, whether it's, you know, you can't forget that 7-5-2 record, that's at a time of year where it's arguably at time, you know, the toughest to win, especially in some of those sort of matchups against, you know, some of the better teams, right? Like, it gets tougher to score. We knew the margins were going to shrink on them, you know, in the second half of the season as we got closer to the playoffs. And could they win a few 3-2 or 2-1 instead of 5-2 and 6-1? And to do it without Demko, I think it just kind of all points towards the strides this team has made defensively, you know, under Rick Tocchet, not just this year. It started last year. My biggest question coming into the season, because I think they were 4th and 5-on-5 after Tocchet took over last year, I just wasn't sure, could he sustain it? Would this group buy in? Were they willing to do the work? And in fairness, you know, all their talk about changing the narrative, they backed it up. They did it. They are 3rd in the National Hockey League right now in expected high danger goals against 5-on-5. 2nd in the National Hockey League on the season in that metric against the rush, which is a really important one come playoff time. Those are the free goals. that you can't afford to give away with mistakes. And that isn't all, you know, we've talked about this. That isn't all defending. It's making smarter, at times safer, less risk averse decisions in the offensive end as well, right? So PK still middle of the pack, D zone. There's times where some of their big bodies will chase in their own end. They're 16th, 5-on-5 in the defensive zone in terms of settled play. You know, once it's sort of set into in zone play, what they give up. And there are times where, you know, some defensemen will sort of veer outside of that structure and chase plays on the perimeter and open up seams and give up backdoor chances compared to where they were before the coaching change. Like, you're talking about two completely different worlds. Bottom three in the NHL in these metrics to top three, it's just such a massive change. It gives them a chance to win without leaning too heavily on their goaltender. And as you saw in a game last night, you've still got a goalie that can make those game-changing, momentum-changing saves, whether it's the back door on Pospisil or Nazem Kadri at the top of the crease on a low-high pop pass on the power play.
One thing that, I mean, by this time next week, Woodley, we might be, you know, past game two or about to play game two, or maybe even after game two of the series against Nashville potentially. So, and before we get to the matchup against Nashville here with you, the way Casey DeSmith played his last start against the Oilers in Edmonton, how important do you think that start was for him? And is that something that is giving him and the team a bit more assurance being the backup in the postseason?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I would say so. Like, I think that was an important start for him. You know, it's funny, I tweeted because I watched him just work his butt off all week. He was out there late, you know, and Ian was out there with him for most of it. And, you know, I got a lot of responses, though, you know, the Ian Clark reset and bounce back and things like that. And it's all true. But talking to Casey when they came back after their next practice, it was really a mental battle for the most part. The extra reps in practice were just because there was three of them. Right, Thatcher was getting a lot of the net. He stayed out late to make sure he got his work in because, you know, between Thatcher and Arturs being on the ice, he wasn't getting as many shots. He wanted to make sure he put that work in and started to feel good about his game. But it was mostly a mental battle. You know, the game in Vegas, I think we can all agree, wasn't on him entirely. There was a lot of probably more odd man rushes in that game than we're used to seeing in a month. Like, not characteristic of this team. And then he tried a little too hard in LA. He admitted that. He pressed a little too much and caught himself maybe going outside of what makes him best. And so that's a mental fight, and that shows you the mental battle he had to sort of reel it back in, both positionally and just sort of mindset-wise for that Edmonton game. And that bodes well. And I think the other part that makes me maybe reconsider, and I still think in the offseason that decisions on backup goaltending may largely come down to salary cap considerations and where you spend your money. But when you see that moment between Demko and DeSmith after the game, after the post-game interview, the hug there, the relationship those two have built, you know, it makes me wonder if there isn't a better chance, or maybe more than I was considering, just because Arturs is cheaper, for Casey Smith DeSmith to come back to this team next year, that maybe that relationship and the stability that he provides in the backup spot and the points he's earned this team, because there is no Pacific Division title without him, as much as people were all over the last month and some of the starts that were sprinkled in there, there's also a lot of points and a lot of starts, and so I'm curious to see which way that goes, but don't underestimate the value of that relationship between those two. And it was sort of on display for everyone else to see. To be honest, it reminded me, you know, a little bit. I'd kind of ignored that. I'd seen it in the room and been part of discussions where it's the three of us talking goaltending and sort of seeing how that has grown. But I kind of maybe was a little too dismissive of it when I talked about what they do for next year with a backup goalie, and seeing that was a really good reminder of the value he provides. Now, on the flip side, if Flower gets 2.5, you know, that might be the market for premium backup goaltenders in that 2+ range, and I'm not sure they can afford that.
So the most likely opponent for the first round of the playoffs is the Nashville Predators. We know it's not guaranteed, but it is the most probable of the opponents the Canucks could still face. And UC Saros happens to be the goaltender who has played the most games in the National Hockey League this year. 64 games played. He ends up with 35 wins in that time. And I know he hasn't always been the Vezina caliber UC Saros we've become used to seeing, at least from where I sit. That's not what I've seen from him this year. What have you seen out of UC Saros this year and how Nashville is setting up in this first round?
Yeah, it's you're right. Like in summary, it hasn't been that year. Like, interestingly enough, as you know, we're at that time of year where I get questions. Frankly, I get them from goalie coaches who slip lists to their GMs for Vezina and media around the league about what some of the numbers say. And somebody mentioned Saros, and I looked it up, and like, he's just barely above expected, guys. Like, this is a guy who's been, you know, top 10 in the league, you know, for the last number of seasons, pretty much since taking over, and should have been a Vezina Trophy finalist last year. It was absurd. He wasn't. And right now he's 38th in goals saved above expected. He's below that in adjusted save percentage. So very uncharacteristic season, a lot more ups and downs than we're used to seeing out of UC Saros. And I just think the pedigree's there that you can't count on that. But certainly based on the seasons they've had to date, we know what he's capable of. He's capable of stealing a series. Like, we've seen how good he can be. But they also rode him hard in the regular season. Last time that he played this many games, he didn't make it to the playoffs. And obviously they had to play Connor Ingram in the postseason a couple of years ago. So on paper, the advantage is Vancouver Canucks and Thatcher Demko. But again, I think it would be a mistake to dismiss Saros. So one of the couple of things that I've seen, you know, and this probably bodes well, just given the way Vancouver attacks is, well, I mean, one doesn't. Breakaway, so one-on-ones has been a shockingly bad statistic for him this season, uncharacteristically so, but it's not like the Canucks generate a ton off the rush, although, you know, breakaways include everything like half ice, one-on-one, partials in tight. And the other one is broken plays. Screens aren't bad, but they're not great, and that's sort of an area where, you know, we know, you know, what the Vancouver Canucks do in terms of screen, like layered screens on an area where he's underwater. And guess what? The Canucks are really good at creating layered screens. Broken plays, he's underwater. Well, that usually comes from having bodies and winning battles in front of the net and around the net front. So doesn't necessarily mean it's going to translate, but there are certainly some statistical trends in areas he's struggled. And I would argue traffic, as much as we'll hear it about all good goalies at this time of the season, for a smaller goalie, it becomes even more of a challenge to sort of find sight lines through those big bodies. And the Canucks are a team that's done a really good job of taking sight lines away and having a defense group that can get not just pucks through, but pucks through to the right areas from the top of the ice. And so, you know, again, does it mean that translates and they go to town on that specifically? Not necessarily, but if it's a difference of finding you an extra goal or two goals in a series or even a goal every couple games, you know, in what could be a tight series, you know, that can be the difference.
One thing I find interesting about them is if you look at some of the, you know, the public data, so to speak, they're one of the good analytics teams. Like, they've been kind of top 10 from what you've seen from them and from the fielders around them. Like, are they a really strong overall team, or are they kind of, you know, carried by a few guys?
Honestly, Sat, I haven't dug in as much as I'd like to, and I guess I probably should. Let's just say that I've done enough research over the years and spent enough time digging in on the old goalie projects I used to do, where I'd look at, you know, every goal every playoff goalie had given up and basically stay up for five straight days, that I've learned not to spend too much time on a series until you actually know who it is,
right?
Because that can quickly become wasted time. So a lot of this stuff is surface level, just looking at some of the analytics I have access to through ClearSight. But to be honest, they're very mediocre team in the underlying numbers when it comes to both creating and giving up high danger chances against. Like, and that's why I thought the adjusted numbers for Saros, like, the raw numbers aren't what we're used to seeing, but I thought maybe the adjusted numbers would be kinder because the defensive environment, like, 5-on-5, they're 16th. Against the rush, they're 22nd. Now, does that matter if you're playing the Canucks, who generate almost nothing off the rush? Maybe not. PK is the only thing on either side of the ledger, for or against, that's in the top 10 in high danger chances for or against for the Nashville Predators, and it's 10th. Like, they don't jump off the chart in terms of their numbers on either side, offensive or defense, in any way. And again, when I looked at Saros' number, even relative to a tougher environment, it's just slightly above expected, not where we're used to seeing. As a matter of fact, Kevin Lankin in the backup, who is going to be very high on my list of guys teams should really consider for a larger role and probably at a reduced salary, has outperformed him on a per-shot basis on the season as a whole.
Woodley, we're going to have a lot of time to break down the series and get more into it. And hopefully by then we'll know at least when it's starting and who the actual opponent is officially by that time. But it's springtime in Vancouver and golf clubs aren't out just yet. We're getting ready for playoff hockey. It sounds good.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome, guys. And like I said, I haven't done all the homework yet, but if Dallas gets a point tonight and we can dig in on Nashville.
Yeah.
And just hit me up anytime. I'll be able to give you a lot more in-depth than I've gotten to date. And I look forward to doing that work.
It is Kevin Woodley. Thanks for this.
Thanks, guys.
Kevin Woodley on Sports at 650, brought to you by White Rock Hyundai. Visit the showroom on King George in White Rock or whiterockhyundai.com.
He really is the best, man. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, he's like, yeah, I haven't really dug into it, but essentially, like, just kind of gave you a pretty good indication of where
I've really dug into it, but here's the lowdown.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's everything you need to know about the Nashville Predators.
And I felt bad. I kind of put him on the spot a little bit too, because we didn't throw it by him before, like, because if we ask him ahead of time, we'll dig into something a bit more or whatever. But he still gave a great answer to it. And I think that's one of the things about Nashville we can talk more about, and we'll see if it ultimately will be Nashville. I'd be very leery of reading too much into the public data, mm-hmm. like in terms of expected goals for per 60 minutes. Third in the league.
Yeah.
But they're nowhere near the third most dangerous offense in the National Hockey League. But they do generate some shots and chances, and their metrics are positive, generally speaking. But I wouldn't buy into those as being as indicative as their standing publicly has. And I thought it was interesting that he mentioned they're pretty much mediocre when you dig a bit deeper.
Yeah, even if you look at what Natural Statric has, Predators would be sixth in expected goals for percentage. But as Woodley just mentioned, maybe not quite as strong when you go to some of the analytics companies that have a lot deeper data than what we are allowed to get to publicly. It's Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. Hopefully we'll know in the next 24 hours who the Canucks opponent will be in the first round of the playoffs.
Well, so Frank Saravalli did tweet out, and Eddie made sure that we saw this tweet, that games have been set for Saturday, Sunday so far. Eastern Conference round one game schedule. So Saturday is going to be Isles and Hurricanes.
Mm-hmm.
Leafs Bruins is mm-hmm. going to be Saturday at 5 p.m. our time. Bolts Panthers are playing on Sunday at 12:30 Eastern time, so 9:30 our time. And the Caps and the Rangers are playing at noon our time on Sunday. Now, that doesn't mean that a Western Conference game or two may not be slotted in there somewhere, because those are early games
there
on
could
the Sunday.
Be two time slots available for maybe a central time zone team. Let's say maybe the Dallas Stars to open their opening round series, or the Colorado Avalanche.
Maybe, but at the same time, they do have two games for each day.
Yeah.
So take some pressure off in terms of ensuring that you're, you know, having to have multiple more games. Well, we'll see. But those are the games scheduled so far. The Western Conference will find out probably, you know, it's probably going to take till Thursday, to be honest.
Yeah, it's probably going to take some time. All right. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. That's the latest. Coming up, overrated, underrated, next on Canuck Central.